I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin. Now you have plucked that podcast out and started listening.
I took my microphone and found some human folk. Then I recorded all the noises while we spoke.
My name is Adam Buxton, I'm a
man. I want you to enjoy this, that's the plan.
Hey, how you doing, listeners? Adam Buxton here. We're going to get straight into it today. This is podcast number 47, which features some conversational rambling and specially recorded music from one of my favourite bands, Spoon, from America. Spoon will be playing in Manchester on Tuesday, the 27th of June, 2017, at the Gorilla Club, and I will be supporting them. Wow! I'll be delivering about 25 minutes of important comedy before Spoon come on stage. May or may not be making my Donald Trump joke, as described in episode 36 of the podcast with Claudia O'Doherty. I will also be supporting Spoon the following night, Wednesday, the 28th of June, when they play at the Art School in Glasgow. And two nights later, on Friday the 30th, the band play in London at the Forum, Kentish Town. I'm not going to be there for that show. I'll be away. Oh, I know, Londoners. Very disappointed at that news, but there you go. If you can't make any of those shows and you still want to see Spoon, they'll be back in the UK in early November of 2017, playing in Brighton, Liverpool and Cambridge. Maybe I'll get to support them then, I don't know. I guess it depends how it goes in Manchester and Glasgow. So if you're at those shows, please act as if my set was the most incredible thing you've ever seen in your life. Thank you. So this conversation with Spoon lead singer Britt Daniel, which features occasional interjections from band members Jim Eno and Alex Fischel, bass player Rob Pope was not around that day, was recorded in East London back in April of this year. And as well as some stories from me and some music chat with Britt and the band, you will be hearing three Spoon songs. Two from their new album Hot Thoughts, and one from their previous, also excellent album, They Want My Soul. All three great stripped-down versions recorded for this podcast with Alex Hayes, producer, engineer, sometime Professor Green collaborator and owner of the studio that we were sat in for our conversation. Now, people sometimes ask me, what's a good Spoon album to start with, Buckles? And I would say Hot Thoughts is one of their best, and it's a good place to start. But I got into them at the end of the 90s when I heard their album A Series of Sneaks playing in Sister Ray Records in Berwick Street. And it sounded to me a bit like a lot of the music that I like, Pixies and Minutemen, Fugazi. But over the years, Spoon have developed a far more distinctive sound that combines tuneful pop melodies with more of an experimental art rock approach. And you can also hear on some of their more recent stuff the influence of, Prince, who Britt talks about a little bit, and some Motown and R&B I can hear in there too. I might mention a few more favourite Spoon records at the end of the podcast. And for Bowie fans, there's a special treat in the form of Britt and Alex Fischel playing a version of I Can't Give Everything Away, the last song on Bowie's last album, Black Star. And it's just a little demo they made while they were rehearsing for some shows they played as a duo. But Britt sent it to me after we talked about it, and I really, really loved it. So I thought I would share it with you too.
You're welcome.
But for now, here we go.
Bye.
We're here with Adam.
Thanks.
We're here with Jim Eno, the drummer for Spoon. This is Alex Fischel, keyboards and guitar. We're also here with Alex. Alex, I don't know your last name.
Hayes.
Alex Hayes.
Yeah.
Who's running the studio.
Sweet sounds.
And what's the name of the studio?
Rooftop.
Off
Hackney Road.
Hackney Road. I just bumped into the whole of Metronomy standing on the pavement as I came in here.
I saw they were here.
Yeah. It was very good. It was like being in a rock and roll movie. Just bands lying around here and there. So last night, you were doing Later with Jules. How did that go?
That's a fun show.
Yeah.
There's nothing else like it.
First time?
Our first time. It's first time to ever be on TV in the UK. We've done it thousands of times in the US.
Yeah.
And recently in France, but never the UK. But yeah, I loved it. It's a great show. And
where do they do it now? In Manchester?
So unique. Maidstone.
Yeah, Maidstone.
In Kent.
And he's fun, isn't he? Did he come and say hello?
He did.
Hello, the Mighty Spoon.
Yes, right.
Who else was on? Kasabian.
Thundercat.
Anderson Paak and the Free Nationals. So good. Yeah. I'd never heard him before. Some of these guys in the band knew him, but I didn't know of him.
He's amazing.
Phenomenal. And then what?
Goldfrapp.
Right. And so what happens then? You get there and do you rehearse in the afternoon?
You're there for 2 days. So we rehearsed on Monday, came back for camera blocking on Tuesday morning, shoot Tuesday night. So by the time you do it, it's kind of the only thing that I've ever done anything like it was Saturday Night Live.
Oh, really?
Because you're there for such a long time over several days. By the time you actually start doing the live show, you're very warmed up.
And yes, and then it is genuinely live, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of the very few shows like that we have in this country, I think, that is actually live.
It's exciting.
Or all the other bands there for the 2 days as well.
Yeah, but you have different call times, so we didn't run into all of them. We were there when Anderson .Paak was rehearsing, and then...
It's cool, like, as the other bands are playing, you're just sort of standing on your stage and watching them, and I don't know, it's just really loose, you know?
Totally unique situation.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Oh, it is a good show. I mean, it's been around for a long time.
This is the 25th year.
Christ, we're old. I'm the oldest person here, I guess. How old are you? Do you mind me asking?
45.
I dream of being 45 again. Party time, the good old days. Do you feel your age?
So I'm supposed to at this point.
Well, I was making old man noises as soon as I hit my 40s. You know, like every time you get up off the sofa. Oh, and right. Then every time you sit down, oh, all this stuff. Old man noises.
I was feeling my age when I was carrying that keyboard amp up the stairs over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was feeling my age then.
Plus, you're rock and rollers. You don't really take the proper precautions and look after yourself.
Sometimes, no. We had a pretty brutal schedule the last 2 months.
And, yeah.
And right when we had our first week off of 2 months, I got sick right like a day or two before.
Oh.
It was perfectly timed for my management.
Your body gets through on adrenaline for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, maybe so.
And then you crash as soon as you've got a window. The body goes, I see you've got a week off next week. I'm going to shut everything down. So don't plan
that
on
exactly what happened.
Having any fun. Now we are resuming the important conversation. I wrote you a fan letter.
I remember.
About 2004 or 5.
Okay.
I think it's maybe the only fan letter I've ever written. And you did respond, although it was very, I mean, it was like one line. It was very non-committal.
Did I email you?
You emailed me, which I was surprised
by. Because you wrote me an actual letter.
Right? I wrote you a letter, typed it.
Yeah.
There's so much going on when someone writes you a letter like that.
Mm-hmm.
They've got their own agenda. They're trying hard to impress you or not say the wrong thing, but not make it too obvious that they're thinking about all this stuff. You know what I mean?
Right.
Trying to be cool. I remember I said something about your first album, Telefono, sounding a bit like the Pixies.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, is he going to appreciate that? Maybe he's had criticism for it sounding like the Pixies. Maybe he's pissed off with people saying it sounds like the Pixies. And then I said, it sounded to me like you'd referenced a song by the Damned, Anti-Pope.
Uh-huh, yeah.
On a track called Jonathan Fisk.
Totally true.
And I really loved that song, and it was such an unusual, surprising reference.
Yeah. And then we got in touch again, or you got in touch again a couple of years later.
Yeah, well, I did a fan video for Don't Make Me a Target.
Right.
And then...
Then you recorded me backstage at
the Borderline. Right.
That's where we first met.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you played at the Borderline. It must have been 2007.
And that was a really good recording, actually. It was like one of the top-watched videos of Spoon on YouTube for a long time. Might still be.
You played it very well. Well, you played a couple of songs, Beast and Dragon Adored and...
Black Like Me was the one.
Black Like Me. It's so good. And that was, yeah, Backstage at the Borderline, which I think still is my favourite gig I've ever been to. I went with a friend of mine called Dougie, who's in the band Travis.
Oh, that's how we met Dougie.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a really small venue, the Borderline, for those not familiar with it. Sweaty little club, you know. And so we were about four people back from the stage. The sound was really good. It was pretty much all the songs that I really like that album anyway. Ga, 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 ga. And so you were playing a lot of those tracks.
Right.
But wow, it was so good. It was one of those gigs where I was stood there and you played about four or five songs before I looked round at Dougie, you know. And we were like, this is great. This is really good. Why don't you introduce the first song?
Yeah, this first one is Hot Thoughts. It's the title track.
And you got a reference to Shibuya in here.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that somewhere you've spent a lot of time in Japan?
No, but I was there recently, but my girlfriend was there last year, and she couldn't sleep, was out walking around on a busy street late at night, like at 2 a.m, apparently there were a lot of people out. And some Japanese guy stopped her on the street and told her what beautiful shining teeth she had.
Hmm.
I thought that was an interesting way of hitting on my girlfriend.
Look at your beautiful teeth.
Your teeth are
usually
so shiny.
Usually when someone says that to me, yeah.
What is it usually? What's usually happening?
No, it never happens.
Oh, okay.
It's never. I'm British. Okay, so here is a specially recorded version of Hot Thoughts.
Hot thoughts melt in my mind. Could be your accent mixing with mine. You got me all tight, twisting inside. Hot thoughts are in my mind and all of the time, babe. Hot thoughts all in my mind, all of the time, yeah. Hot thoughts all in my mind, all of the time. Shining so white, light up this side street and Shibuya tonight. Hot thoughts melt in my cool. Is it your motion signaling cues? Hot thoughts all in my mind and all of the time. You must be a trouble for sure. Thoughts all in my mind, all of the time, yeah. I tell it to you slow, and I want you to know. Thoughts all in my mind, all of the time. Took time off from my kingdom, took a break from the war. Took time off from my kingdom, raise up my creatures, diamonds from space, pure facets and features. Last track cut from your lips, making you think I could've was to let baby kiss my nose. Hot thoughts melt in my cool. Is it your motion, the signal and cues you got? Hot thoughts all in your mind, all of the time, yeah. I only do my rhyme, maketh your mind. It's all in my mind, all of the time.
So there we go. Hot Thoughts from your new record of the same name. Good artwork, by the way. Who's that?
Christine Messersmith, just a friend of mine. I didn't know she was an artist, but I was looking at her Instagram.
Uh-huh.
Last summer, and she started putting up these watercolors, and I saw that one. I said, that looks like a record cover.
Yeah. It's been going down very well, the new record, hasn't it?
Has it?
Yeah.
Good. Well, I can't really tell.
Do you not feel?
Well, I'm in the middle of it, you know?
Does it feel to you like, this is the one, this is going to be the one that pushes us over the top? Not that you need pushing over the top, because you're doing very well. But do you crave, like, being pushed into some mysterious mainstream super zone?
It'd be cool to have a hit.
What would you do, though, if you were a band that was suddenly in the top 10 around the world?
Right.
Obviously, you'd be making more money. That would make things easier in lots of ways. But apart from that, if your profile was raised to that degree, you must surely consider all the drawbacks and all the things that wouldn't be so fun about that.
I don't put a lot of time to considering that.
Do you know?
Not really. I remember this one time when we first were offered a record deal by Geffen, you know, right when we first started. And I started thinking about artists on Geffen, and I was like, do I really want to have Courtney Love's lifestyle? But I was really getting ahead of myself, you know?
Yeah,
I'm not that worried about it. We've been in the top 10 in the US, what, for albums?
Yes.
Yeah, but you mean like a single?
Having a sort of Coldplay level of success and acceptance and recognition around
the world.
I'd
probably get to fly private for the first time.
What, in a private jet?
Yeah.
Have you never been in a private jet?
No, have you?
I have.
Okay, yeah, I've never done it.
I hadn't earned it. It was because I had a rich friend
school.
And on the way to the airport, we were riding in convoy with various members of his family. I was riding in the car with his dad, and he was riding in the car behind us. And this was pre-internet, just pretty basic mobile phone technology. As we were leaving the house, because I was staying with them, I saw that my friend had left his passport on the table on the side in the corridor. And I thought, what's he doing? He better not leave us. I thought, I'll take it, but I won't say that I've got it until we get to the airport. And he's going, oh my God, I've left my passport. And I'll be able to go, it's okay. I've got it. I'm a genius. And everyone would be patting me on the back. Right. And it would be like, hey, thank goodness we've got Buckles on holiday with us. Oh, hooray. What would we have done without him?
Buckles.
So then we're in the car going to the airport. And my friend's dad was looking behind. He was like, where the hell's the other car gone? I told him to stay right behind us. Now we're going to be late. And he starts shouting at the driver. He's like, I told you to keep them right behind us. What are you doing, you idiot? And I was thinking, oh, I'm glad I'm not the driver. This is bad. And then the driver gets a call. The other car's just called. They've had to go back because your son left his passport.
Right.
So I'm sitting there, my blood's turning to ice. I think, oh no. And I said, I saw it was on the side. I've got it, actually. Well, you bloody idiot, what are you doing? Why didn't you say anything? For Christ's sake, why would you pick up his passport and put it in your pocket? What a ridiculous thing to do. I'm sorry. And
why are you riding with him instead of your friend?
I don't know, because it was all, everyone was leaving in a fluster, and it was like, well, just, you go ahead. And, it was bad. So the flight in the private jet was considerably less celebratory than it would have been otherwise. Yeah. I was just sat there trying to look small, like, ooh, this is embarrassing. But it was still pretty fun. Anyway, so if you do get to go in a private jet, don't do any hilarious passport practical jokes.
Got it.
Top tip. One of the things I like about your lyrics, Britt, is that you work in lots of little references to things here and there, and it's fun trying to sort of decode them and imagine what they refer to. Sometimes you're quite overt and very specific in a way that few bands I can think of are. The obvious example being Agony of Lafitte. Short version of the story, you were dropped from Elektra Records.
Right.
After your second LP came out, Series of Sneaks.
First one with them. And he quit the label and then we got fired that week.
And this was a guy called Ron Lafitte. An A&R man.
Yeah.
You felt as if he had gone back on a promise that he'd made.
He had, yeah.
What did you feel that he reneged on?
Well, he tried to sign us for a very long time, and we went through all of the issues of what our concerns were for signing to a major label. He was like, I got it. I'm going to help you through this. And then once we signed the deal, we just didn't hear from him, really. And I think after the record came out, I couldn't even get him on the phone. And then he quit the label. And then we were dropped the week that he quit. So I felt like, yeah, he had gone AWOL and left us out in the cold, and it really fucked us over. You know, I'm over it now, but it helped to put out those two songs, you know?
Right. So when was that, like a year later or something that you did the song?
Yeah, less than a year later.
You got straight on it.
Yeah, we did. It was motivating. Once we had the titles, it was motivating, you know?
Well, exactly. His name was Lafitte, and so you had fun with the song titles, Lafitte, Don't Fail Me Now, and The Agony of Lafitte. Both really good songs, though. That's the thing that surprised me, was that you could sympathize with the impulse of just wanting to bitch about someone, but usually that's not the best impulse to write like an actual enduringly good piece of music.
It is a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But was there a consensus among the band that that was a good thing, or did you not think, like, maybe we're going to be burning bridges here, especially as you're naming the guy specifically? You're even talking about, in the chorus, name-checking Sylvia Roan, who was the boss of Elektra at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics are really quite vitriolic.
All I ever asked of you was a copy of Garage Days of Tell Me the Truth. Hello, I watch you exit Ventura Highway. It's like I'm new to you, man. The one before and after. We shook hands, taken the calls, but I'm not forgetting what's been said.
All I ever asked of you is a copy of Garage Days. What is that? The album?
By Metallica.
Metallica. Yeah,
which
album.
Was a hard... It was out of print at that point.
And was that one of the things that Ron Lafitte had promised you?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
that one I wasn't as worried about, but he didn't come through on that either.
All I ever asked of you is a copy of Garage Days and to tell me the truth. Ain't no one watching you exit Ventura Highway. It's like I knew two of you, man. The one before and after, we shook hands, taking the calls, but in all forgetting what's been said. And it carries on in a similarly bitter vein, right?
Right. Right.
Was no one saying to you, maybe you don't want to...
There were a couple people. We still had a manager at that point, and he and didn't... maybe even our lawyer, too, were both like, I don't know about this.
Right, yeah.
It's not about burning bridges, but about there being some kind of lawsuit or something.
Right.
Uh-huh. And I said, I don't think there's going to be a lawsuit. We got to do it.
And was there ever any comeback from them?
No. Not
and have
really.
You, have you ever... Not really.
Yeah.
Did they ever reach out and say, hey, that wasn't very nice?
Did Lafitte?
Yeah.
No. But he's been interviewed about the band many times. And honestly, every time that his name comes up in a piece that where he's joining a management company or switching jobs, it's always like, it always references that song.
Does that make you delighted?
Eh. I mean, I really am over it at this point. And all the quotes that he's given in the press have always been right on. He's like... You know, I did let them down. Maybe he has to say that. I mean, it's definitely, we got to where we needed to be.
Sure.
It was a great thing to do. It gave a, because we were bummed and a little bit embarrassed, you know, and also felt like, well, we'd blown it. We'd been on this great independent label. The record didn't do well. We were on this big major label.
Which was the independent label?
Matador.
Right.
We were on this big major label. It didn't do well. And then I kind of felt like, I'm probably out of the record-making club. I'm not sure if we're going to get to do this anymore, but putting out the single, it just kind of gave us a kick. You know? And in giving us a kick, it kind of gave us this story that sort of turned things around for us. And there was a piece in the Village Voice about the band and being dropped and in relation to the single and how great the single was. And it was like the first story that anybody could ever latch onto about us. You know?
Right.
It is a break, it's a break, it's a break in the podcast. It is a bit between two other bits. It's a break, it's a break, it's a break in the podcast. It's like a necklace between two tits. It's a musical break, it's a pause in the podcast. Stopping one bit from merging with another bit. Break, 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 break in the podcast. Kind of like a bum crack track.
You were a sound designer for video games.
That's right.
When was that?
Right after college.
Hmm.
My first job out of University of Texas.
What were you studying?
Audio production.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so it was a real good bit of luck because I didn't have any experience with digital. Like, I was just working with tape before then, and then all of a sudden I got thrown in, got this job, got paid to learn how to do digital audio, and that was good. It was the best job I ever had, for sure.
Really?
Very chill.
Yeah.
Nice work environment.
Were you just working with a small group of people then? And
it was a pretty big company, maybe 100 people there.
Mm.
and they're all just focused on making video games every day and playing video games every day, and it was cool.
Are you still a gamer?
Not really.
And so you were just coming up with sound effects and stuff?
Yeah, just sound effects. I didn't even make music for them. There were other people there that did. It was an amazing company, yeah. You know, an amazing job to just make sound effects.
Was the bigger picture always to make music or not really?
Yeah, it was, yeah. For sure. So while I was doing that amazing job, I was taking advantage by spending, you know, half the day making flyers and printing them up on the paper from the company, you know, it was designing them and then printing.
And was that the Alien Beats then?
At the beginning it was Alien Beats and then it was Spoon, yeah.
Okay. Spoon, is that the Can track?
Yeah.
That's a good song, isn't it?
It is a good song.
And what were you doing when you first started a band then? Were you just trying to be as original as possible, or were you just getting into a sort of finding your feet by imitating your heroes?
What, this band?
Yeah, well, your band, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was definitely imitating my heroes.
And but, who were they?
The Pixies.
Right.
And the Beatles and Prince, although I don't really think that it came out. We actually covered Prince back in that time.
Which Prince song?
We covered Party Up.
Uh-huh.
Which is an amazing song. And don't listen to our version, though. It's a little
well, maybe,
obnoxious.
Was it the sort of falsetto that you were going for?
I loved that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was always like an ingredient that I knew I should use, you know, at some point. And finally, with I turned my camera on, it finally happened.
Mm.
And it didn't feel like a lightning bolt or anything. It was like, oh, I'm finally going to do this thing I've been meaning to do. Sing a song all in falsetto, you know. It's a formula for a single, really, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's just such a great element.
And then you've got your sort of growl, your barky, shouty voice as well.
Right.
Does that not strip out your throat?
Sometimes it makes me raspy.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the end of a show.
Do you have to do special exercises?
I don't really do any exercises unless I'm going to go on TV. Then I'll specifically try to warm up.
Right.
I'm pretty lucky. My voice is pretty strong and I can do show after show and not lose it.
Yeah.
The only time I lose it is when I'm sick. You know? And there's like, you know, sinus stuff going on. Then I lose it.
Let's introduce the next track that you're going to play.
The next one is I Ain't the One.
I Ain't the One, and this is also from the new record.
Right.
What can you tell me about this, either of you?
This is the first song I worked on with you.
Yeah.
For Hot Thoughts.
I wrote the chords. Alec came up with the vibe.
Yeah, it was acoustic guitar, and then we
changed it.
Ditched that.
Late one night after a South by Southwest show.
Yeah.
It was a fun night.
It was.
We had a few of those where we would get coffeeed up, keep drinking, and
stay up late.
Yeah, just try out different versions.
That's a good time for working, an optimal time, is it?
It's a good time for certain parts of working. It's not a good time for me for coming up with words or maybe the original ideas, but it's good for getting those ideas and turning them into something that's got a feel to it, you know?
What about early mornings? What happens then?
Early mornings is, it can be good for starting off fresh and starting out without any, you know, kind of being that sort of hazy state where you're not fully awake and not fully into that very mindful state yet. Mm-hmm. And that's good. Yeah. Sometimes I try to take advantage of that.
I've always been fascinated by how people can write lyrics and just get out of themselves to that degree.
Yeah, it's hard.
And not just be embarrassed by... It's a bit like what I was saying about writing fan letters. You don't want the listener to be able to decode all the thoughts that are going into the lyrics too easily.
I try not to worry about that.
Do you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're just going for the sound of the words, are you?
No, the meaning matters too, but there's been so many times when I've been stuck on a specific lyric trying to come up with this meaning for this, you know, this next line should mean this because it relates to that. And I'll try it for days and days. And then at some point I'll just go, this isn't where I, you know, like, okay, I'm just going to play the song and then record myself just singing some syllables. And then that will turn into something that's so much better than what I've been trying to come up with. It might even make more sense. You know, it really does work like that. It's hard to let go sometimes. You know?
Yeah. So, yeah, just noises and blue blah. Did you listen to the reissue of Remain in Light where David Byrne and Brian Eno were on the left and right channel?
No.
They had an instrumental track and they were both just doing that, just making sounds like, and they had one little phrase which was dancing for money. It was really interesting to hear their different approaches to how they covered.
And
where
these were vocal takes from back then that they hadn't used, and now they're showing it to us.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Were they doing them together, or did they do separate?
They did them one at a time. And they panned the passes left and right.
That's pretty cool. Oh yeah, I got to hear that. Yeah.
It's very interesting. Yeah, I mean, cool. It's not a piece of music you'd want to listen to over and over again.
Right.
It's very interesting with that record how actually the outtakes are really not that great. They got all the good stuff and they put it on the record.
Right.
But I guess the way that that record was made, perhaps with them just jamming, mm-hmm. meant that
they were very selective about what they ended up working on.
Because the danger was obviously that they would be very indulgent and you get these tedious jams that go on forever and ever. And actually, no, they'd honed it and really worked on it. It's fascinating. Anyway, here's I Ain't the One. Sorry about that long detour.
Oh,
There we go. That was I Ain't the One from Spoon's new record. Well, that's,
there we go.
That version is not. That's a special exclusive version, specially recorded for this podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, just man. Did it. I'd just like to say at this point that I'm very grateful to Natalie Judge. She's at Matador, right?
Yeah.
And she's been so helpful setting up this podcast
yeah.
and booking a studio and getting you guys. And so thank you to her as well as to all of you.
It was her idea. I mean, we've known each other for a long time, but we just never put it together.
I'm delighted. Now, you guys, maybe I've benefited a little bit from the fact that I feel like you're Anglophiles, especially you to some degree, Brit, right?
Sure.
You seem to like a lot of weird British stuff, which I think most Americans probably wouldn't be aware of. Things like The Young Ones?
Yeah, well, The Young Ones for sure. When I was growing up, like in the 80s, that was everything that I was super into was it seemed like was British. I don't know, they kind of owned rock and roll for a long time, the Brits. There were only 12 episodes of The Young Ones, but somehow it was a major movement, you know, amongst my friends in high school.
Where were you watching it?
It was on MTV on Sunday nights.
And, there's only 12 episodes?
There's only 12 episodes.
Because I remember watching that too.
Six per season, two seasons.
Wow.
And, you know, I think I have pretty much all of them memorized. Because I would put it recorded on VHS and I would just watch it over and over again.
Yeah.
And, you know, pick up on little bits of the culture that first time I actually heard of Jules Holland was on The Young Ones.
Right.
Because he did a Subterranean Homesick Blues with some band that he was the band leader for.
Yes. Who would that have been?
It was like Jules Holland and the something. Stuart Copeland was in the band.
And they were one of the bands that played on The Young Ones.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I remember Nine Below Zero playing.
Yeah,
they're
the first ones, right?
Yeah. And
The Damned.
The Damned.
Motorhead.
Yeah, that's right.
Madness twice, I think.
Dexys, they were on weren't they?
Yeah.
They even played Come On Eileen, didn't they?
No, they played the Van Morrison song.
Oh, yeah. Jackie Wilson said.
Yeah.
What's your favorite episode? What's the line that rings round your head when you think of The Young One? There's someone at the door, Rick. There's someone at the door, Neil.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I just loved how they were calling each other bastard all the time.
Yeah.
I never heard that on TV.
You know? Bastard.
Yeah.
Relaxing with a group of people. Sitting round the cool and jazzy sofa. Everybody's eating cake and pies and crisps and sipping fizzy pop from cups. Ooh. Relaxing with a group of people. Sitting round the cool and jazzy sofa. Everybody here is eating cake and pies and crisps and sipping fizzy pop from cups.
There's a question for all of you chaps. So I'm interested to know what kind of music you're into. Who are the artists that you keep coming back to? Alex, we'll start with you.
David Bowie.
Are you all Bowie fans?
Oh, yeah. What's not to love?
I heard that you were even doing a cover of I Can't Give Everything Away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've done that live, have you?
Yeah, we did it in Mexico.
At a duo show.
Yeah.
We haven't done a... Spoon hasn't played it, but Alex and I have played it.
And we've done it a couple times. Like radio stations,
yeah.
I think, as well.
And that's the for non-Bowie heads, that's the last track on his last LP. And it's such a lovely song,
yeah,
and it seems to be him sort of tying up loose ends in so many ways.
Mm-hmm. The melody is so great.
Yeah.
It's just heart-wrenching, you know?
Yeah.
And some amazing chords, really unexpected chords.
It's such a good record,
so good
as well, isn't it? Black Star, like in the 90s, every single album that came out, everyone would say, oh, it's back to his brilliant best.
Right.
His best since Scary Monsters. And it never was.
Right. And the same thing with the Rolling Stones, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But then Black Star really was good.
Yeah, it really
good.
Is.
It was like properly good. So were you gutted when he passed away?
Yeah. I've never been affected by like somebody yeah. like a celebrity figure like that. You know, like they're passing. It's upsetting. But this one was affecting me emotionally.
Yeah.
And that was surprising.
I've tried to think about since then who... Because sometimes, you know, celebrities pass and, you know, I love Bo Diddley, but Bo Diddley passed and I was like, okay.
I think when Iggy Pop passes.
Yeah, yeah.
Just especially having seen that show we saw at Telegram.
Yeah,
it's just like his energy.
And he's a treasure.
To see him do what he does and see him run around the stage is just this force of good, you know?
Yeah.
To see that and then to have that leave Earth will be a sad day.
It's amazing that Iggy Pop just made it, didn't he? I mean, he's one of the most sort of self-destructive people
ever in music. All the ingredients were there for him to just completely implode.
Yeah, and he's still going. Yeah, and still...
And going strong.
Yeah, bringing a lot of energy.
Yeah, he's just got a bit of spare skin. That's the only difference. He can just use it as pockets. But other than that, it's the same guy. What are your... I heard you were listening to Lodger a lot. Was that recording this record?
Yeah. We're sleeping in the same building as the studio, this farmhouse out in the middle of the woods. But there's a in the common area, there's a CD player there, and that's the only way you can listen to music. So we were burn CDs, but we didn't burn too many of them. One of them was Lodger, and so we kept listening to Lodger over and over again. There's like a Kinks comp, the OC's comp, John Coltrane.
Miles Davis.
James Brown.
Was it a Talking Heads comp?
Yeah, there was a Talking Heads, yeah. And that's about it.
Yeah.
Our producer did not like hearing Bowie as he walked through.
Yeah.
Why not? He didn't. He was fed up.
So very surprisingly, Dave Fridman is not that into Bowie. He's like, he's a weird, you know, he has eclectic taste.
Who else has Dave Fridman worked for? He's done. Does he do the Flaming Lips?
Yeah, all the Flaming Lips records.
Right. And he's MGMT. Your producer on Hot Thoughts.
And the one before, yeah.
MGMT as well.
Yeah, MGMT. What else? Some big ones. He did a Tame Impala record. Yeah. But yeah, he would just relentlessly
He says like two musical theater. Is that what he said?
I always, I'm always amazed when people use that criticism about Bowie, because I just think that is, you missed the point. The great thing about him was that he had it all. He was silly and camp and over the top and musical theatre, but there was so much substance there in the music. It stood up completely on its own. It would have been good even if he was a totally boring guy.
Right.
But the fact that he wasn't a totally boring guy just made it even more enjoyable to be in that universe.
A lot of different levels going on.
How about you, Britt? What are the bits of music that you keep coming back to, all the artists who never let
Prince
you down?
Prince a lot. Yeah. Prince is a big one. You know, obviously the Beatles are timeless. The Cure, the first four albums are amazing. The sixth album is amazing. I don't really like the fifth one for some reason.
Which is the fifth one?
The Top.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good.
The Top's got some good stuff.
But I'm just saying, Head on the Door is just absolutely stunning, and that's the sixth one. But the first four are just all have such an incredible vibe. It's a real inspiration.
You're a Van Morrison fan as well, right?
We've covered Van Morrison, but...
Which Van Morrison have you covered?
Jackie Wilson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which I learned from the Young Ones.
Ah. Yeah. Yes, because there's definitely a sort of Van Morrison feel to the Underdog, at least.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, totally true. I realized that as I was doing it. Yeah. Van Morrison, and the other thing I thought was like Simon and Garfunkel, keep the customer satisfied kind of feeling, yeah.
How about you, Jim? What are the records that you keep coming back to?
I don't know. We recently had this tour manager that we really loved who tour managed Morrissey. So I've been listening to a lot of Smiths.
We heard a lot of Morrissey stories.
A lot of Morrissey stuff. He's an amazing guy. And Alex kept playing This Charming Man on guitar over and over and over. So
now they're kind of covering it.
It's lost its luster a little bit, to be honest.
How's your Morrissey impression, Britt?
What was that thing? What was that line?
Punctured bicycle.
Punctured bicycle. That's on a hillside desolate. Will nature make a man of me?
I love the Smiths.
You know who else I've been listening to is The.
Oh, yeah.
Because I found out that, didn't Jules Holland play the solo on like Uncertain Smile or something?
That's right.
That crazy piano.
That
so I went back and listened to that when I found out we were playing Jules Holland. And
good solo?
Amazing.
What album is that on?
It's not Dust.
Soul Mining.
Yeah, Soul Mining, yeah.
It's very good.
Really, really good. Yeah. Dogs of Lust, like that song. I think that's an amazing song.
That's a good title.
Are they well respected over here?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Matt Johnson, he's great. He was always well respected, I think.
Was he? Yeah.
A lot
better known
stuff.
Here, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, is he not that well known?
Mind Bomb, that did pretty well. But it was always sort of like you might hear him on 120 Minutes.
Yeah, fringe kind of thing. Never had a real
120 Minutes was this video show on Sunday
I remember.
Night. Yeah, yeah.
With Matt Penfield.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Later on, yeah. Living in Temple, Texas, that was how you found out about new music, was 120 Minutes. Every now and then there'd be an enemy at the bookstore, you know. But that was it.
tell us about your final track that you've played for us.
Played for you.
This last one is Rainy Taxi. It's a different arrangement of this song from the last record.
They want your soul.
They want my soul.
They want my soul.
They want my soul.
Okay, here we go. This is Rainy Taxi, specially recorded for the Adam Buxton podcast by Spoon, or at least three members thereof.
Thanks, Buckles.
You're welcome. This is an advert for Squarespace.
Hey guys, it's Broshak with me, Paul Broshak. We got Mike here. We're going to talk about his new MMA comedy special. We're going to talk about his view counts, and we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. What's up, Mike?
Hello, Paul.
Hey, brother.
I'm fine, thank you. I don't want to talk about any of those things anymore.
You don't?
No. I want to talk about... I built a website, Paul.
All right. Stream some fights, settle some beefs, stick it to the elites, that kind of thing.
No. It's mainly dog pictures, Paul. And I did it on Squarespace. Have you heard of Squarespace? I went to squarespace.com/Buxton and I did a free trial. And I tried some of the beautiful templates, Paul. And I typed things in. I dragged in pictures of the dogs. And before I knew it, I had a website, Paul. So I bought it and I've made some very sweet dog t-shirts. And I sell those on the shop on the website.
Uh-huh. But do you still fight and stuff?
A little bit, but not really. Oh, and Paul, I wanted to tell you that when it comes time to buy your website or domain on Squarespace, if you use the offer code Buxton, you save 10%. Paul.
Thanks, Mike. Where'd you do that free trial?
Squarespace.com/Buxton.
And how sweet were the dogs?
Very.
Continue.
There we are. Thank you very much to Britt Daniel, Jim Eno, and Alex Fischel of Spoon. Hope you enjoyed that. Thank you also to Alex Hayes at Rooftop Studios over in East London for engineering that session. And thank you especially to Natalie Judge, once again from Matador, for getting the whole thing together. Thank you, Natalie. I really appreciate it. I was thinking maybe what I should do is get it together to do a Spotify playlist. are some of my favorite tracks as a primer, a spoon primer. And I will put that on my website, adam-buxton.co.uk, if I can figure out how to make the Spotify playlist. You would think that a muso bore like myself would be all over that kind of thing, but no, I haven't done one so far. Anyway, I'll try to do that, and I'll also put a link there to the videos that I shot of Britt back in 2007, the first time we met backstage at the Borderline. Anyway, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, here is a previously unheard demo of Britt and Alex Fischel from the band rehearsing David Bowie's I Can't Give Everything Away. And they were doing this because they played a few shows just as a duo, and this is one of the tracks they covered after Bowie died. But I think this is a really lovely version. I hope you agree. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. The podcast will return on a regular weekly basis towards the end of September, early October, I think. But there may well be another kind of one-off, slightly different podcast coming your way in the next few weeks. So, till next time, we share the same aural space. Please take exceptionally good care. I love you. Bye.
Returns for prodigal sons, the blackout hearts, the flowered news, or skull designs upon my shoe. I can't give everything. I can't give everything. Sons, the blackout hearts, the flowered news, with skull designs upon my shoes.